All right. Welcome back, everyone, to the Crypto Rundown, where we talk about everything that's going on in the gray world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. From the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the charts, we spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And the best part about it is that we give it to you completely for free on here. All that we ask is that if you like the stuff that we're doing, if you like the content that we're making and the information that we are providing to you, consider hitting the like and subscribe button. And if you really like it, check out those links in the description down below and even leave us a review. Also, one final reminder here, if you're listening in on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Audible or anywhere else, and you want to see all of the charts and articles and data that we're showing on screen, then you got to go over to our YouTube channel. It's the Crypto 101 podcast on YouTube. And that's where you're going to see all of the physical data points that we're going to be showing over the course of today's episode. But man, it's good to be back, everyone. Happy end of March. We are already pushing into April. And quarter one is just about over. And man, we're going out with a bang. There's all sorts of positive stuff to talk about. BlackRock is all over the news. They're expanding into Europe. They're adding their Biddle fund over to Solana. They're expecting that thing to grow over $2 billion. World Liberty Financial is coming out with a stable coin. That was a huge talk of the White House crypto summit that we saw just a few weeks ago. GameStop's coming in with a MicroStrategy-like approach to continue buying Bitcoin. We got to talk about the Solana ETF, whether Solana could have bottomed. We're even going to be bringing up the one and only Mr. Jim Cramer himself towards the end of this episode. But I think the big thing that people want to talk about here and the big thing that everyone wants to hear about is what is happening with the price of the crypto markets. That's been a really, really big talking point. So we're going to talk about not only what's going on Bitcoin and some things to watch, what's going on in altcoins and in the greater macroeconomic environment. And there's three pillars that we want to talk about and kind of how that correlates to the crypto market. So again, an action-packed episode. We know we've had a lot of these lately, but man, there's just a lot to talk about. So TiVo, how are you feeling over there?
Dude, feeling good. We had some technical difficulties this morning getting the stream going, so we're not live where we usually are, but we are live on YouTube. So if you're live with us on YouTube, I see a couple friends in there. Give us a like. Feel free to drop a comment. We can get to questions at the end. But yeah, always frustrating when the technology doesn't work as you hope it does, but we're here. And as always, there's a lot to talk about, so we'll dive right in.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Hey guys, TiVo here to talk to you about Body Health and Fitness subscription plans. As we all know, health and fitness is a journey for everybody throughout their life, and I personally have loved using Body, and I have seen the success and the results it gives because it gives you access to health and fitness 24/7, 365, and that's so important to me as somebody who gets busy with work, busy with investing and studying all the great information that we give to you every week. Sometimes health and fitness can take a back seat, but not with Body because it's so readily available that it's been the perfect plan for me to have success. Guys, the Body Fitness subscription provides 140 plus structured programs for all fitness levels with a variety of formats and trainers. There is literally something for everybody. And as a personal anecdote, it is quite entertaining. I personally have a friend who is one of the trainers. His name is Lath. He will make you laugh as you work out. Literally, you'll be feeling it in your thighs, in your arms, and in your belly with all the laughter and entertainment that he brings. And it's really an engaging experience overall with all the fitness and stuff because they have something for everybody. They have cardio, weights, yoga, HIIT. It's all there and you'll never get bored. Me personally, I'm always doing cardio 2 to 3 times a week. I'm lifting weights and I'm doing yoga to stay limber. Right now, body.com, that's BODI.com, has the Total Solutions bundle. It comes with Body annual fitness subscription, Shakeology superfood nutrition shakes, which are so delicious, free eating plans, free shaker cup, and free shipping, all for 60% off compared to buying each product separately. Guys, you got to check out their before and afters so you can see the results of everyday people getting on the Body program and seeing success. So go to Body, BODI.com, and use code Crypto101 for 15% off. That's Body.com, BODI.com, and use code Crypto101 for 15% off.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We're a little bit away from our usual setup, but man, we're on the move. Here we are. And to everyone that is tuning in live on YouTube, it's good to have you. And for everyone that's listening back, it's equally as good to have you as well. And I think the best way to kick off this episode is just with what's happening on the charts, right? A lot of people are looking at the crypto markets and saying, hey, what's going on here? You know, is it good? Is it bad? And lately, everything has been pretty good. You know, we've been seeing a pretty sharp rise here in cryptocurrency across the board. And I want to do a quick screen share where we can actually see what is going on over here. So if we just look at Bitcoin over the last like week or so, we've started having a really nice rally back to the upside. And this is where we saw Bitcoin especially come from around $76,000 all the way up to this recent high of almost $89,000. And so what this did is this represented about a 15 to 16% move back to the upside as Bitcoin continues to be in a pretty volatile range ever since the breakdown of 90K last month. So we've been bouncing from, you know, 100K to 70K, back up to 100, back down to 70 or 80, back up to the 90s, just back and forth in what has historically been, you know, about a 15 to 22% range up and down, back and forth, which again presents a lot of volatility in Bitcoin, but even more volatility when it comes to altcoins because they're moving at around 2 to 3 times the volatility rate that Bitcoin is doing. So we are getting quite a bit of volatility. And with this kind of nice move to the upside here, again, a little bit of an upwards trend, Bitcoin has a couple of key levels that I think everyone should be watching out for on this rally. Now, with Bitcoin kind of continuing to squeeze around this 200, this 20, this 50-day moving average, there's one big thing that I'm watching out for on the upside, and that is this previous support level of around $90,000. We know that Bitcoin used this as a support in November, December, January, and February before the breakdown, and now we started to see it use it as a little bit of resistance as we rallied off this level at the end of February and at the beginning of March. And that's where we got these two lower high rejections on Bitcoin from that $90,000, you know, low $90,000 price point right here and right here. So now as we're coming back into this level, we can say, hey, we know that this used to be a big support. It's very clearly now being used as a form of a resistance level. So as we're coming back into this area, I'm saying, hey, I want to keep an eye on Bitcoin right around the low $90,000 level if we can get up there, because we know that it's had issues with this in the past. Now, if we do get a sharp rejection here, then I'd say, okay, well, let's actually look back towards maybe 80K. And I think that's a very reasonable area to see Bitcoin if we do get a rejection, if not maybe even a little bit lower than that. So again, about $10,000 price potential in both directions. If we can crack 90K and not see a rejection, I think that we can go to 100, and you know, that wouldn't be anything too crazy. But the volatility, while it has slowed down a little bit, these price ranges are, you know, remaining pretty steady. Again, double digit spreads here just about every week for Bitcoin, and for altcoins that is just exaggerated even more. Now, we're going to wrap back towards some of these altcoins towards the end of the episode, but just on the day here, you know, we've started to see Solana have a really nice rally off this low from the middle of March, and it's up about 25% already. So it's kind of found some support at last year's bottom level. And this is where we saw Solana find the bulk of its bottom. And this is where we saw it pivot, you know, a handful, almost half a dozen times just in 2024. And so now we're returning to kind of this 2024 consolidation area. And this is where Solana is starting to see a lot of love. And it looks like, hey, this could hold, but we're going to return back to this in just a little bit. Other than that, crypto markets are coming down a little bit today. I know Ethereum's down about 2.5%. XRP is red about 1.5%. A couple of the other altcoins are red anywhere from maybe 2, 3, 4%. But nothing too crazy. I think people are just waiting to see what's going to happen here. And one of the big things that I have seen here, TiVo, and I'm going to flash this up on the screen for us, is that crypto investment products reverse a 5-week outflow streak. And what this has done is added about $644 million in assets. And this is a big deal because now what we're starting to see, and we talked about this last week, is we said, hey, there's a lot of whales out there buying Bitcoin behind the scenes. There's a lot of institutional money that's starting to get back into this. And that was over a week ago that we were reporting on it. Well, here we are, fast forward a week later, we're a lot higher up than where we were last week. So, you know, I'm not going to say, hey, we bring this to you early, but I'm going to say, hey, we're bringing all this to you early. We told you all, you know, the past 2 weeks, institutional money has been buying behind the scenes. Whales are secretly buying, and we've shown you the data for that. And as that has come out, of course, the price is going up and up and up and up. And we've seen hundreds of millions of dollars, if not, you know, if we add them all together, billions of dollars started coming back in to not only Bitcoin itself, but also these ETFs from BlackRock, from Fidelity, from a few of these other players. And they're not slowing down as well. We're going to talk about what BlackRock and Fidelity's next moves are, because both of them are making moves to expand what they're doing in the world of blockchain tech and also in the world of cryptos. So again, I'm not going to spoil it too much, but they're not slowing down. You know, not only are we seeing massive amounts of inflows return, but we're seeing them kind of expand their operations, which is just a great thing to see, because that just shows, hey, you know, they're in this for the long haul. They're not going anywhere. They're actually still ramping up instead of slowing anything down. So it's a good thing to see. But that's the bulk of kind of the high level. If we're looking at just sheer price analysis, again, a couple of zones to target, a couple of levels to keep an eye on, but things are looking good here. And I think a big catalyst for this, a big reason for why really all of the markets have started going back to the upside has to do with the macroeconomic environment. And Tiva, what did you call this? You called it like the triangle of something?
Yeah, it was the Bermuda Triangle of between inflation, the Fed, and tariffs.
Yeah, and we're seeing that fully at play. And I think that's the best way to describe like what we're seeing here. Now, most of us are familiar, if you've been watching the markets at all, they've been selling off since really kind of towards the start of this year. Earlier this year, we started seeing the market sell off. And it was a mix of all of this. We saw that people were getting scared about what was going to happen in the Fed. We had that, I'll never forget it. We had that crazy Fed meeting in December and then going into January where everyone was super hyped up. We thought that everything was going to, you know, sail to new highs. We were going to get a good old Jay Powell meeting. And then he comes out and he starts just speaking fear, speaking uncertainty. And, you know, at one point he starts talking about, hey, maybe we'll hike things. You know, maybe we'll talk about rate hikes. You thought we were going to cut? And that shocked everyone, right? Everyone was kind of caught off guard, and that kind of started the turbulence, like this fear around the Fed, what was going to happen with interest rates. That started leading into more fears. Hey, what's happening with inflation? What's happening with jobs? Then the tariff stuff starts coming out, then the DeepSeek news, and it's just one after another. And we started to see the waters get more and more choppy, more and more turbulence in the air. And, you know, as tariffs started to ramp up, we saw the markets start to nosedive. And it wasn't just crypto. It was essentially all of the markets, especially these risk-on markets like equities, stocks, and cryptocurrency. And so what we've started to see here is a lot of clarity. Now, last week, we had the FOMC event. We talked about how it was going to happen. And we had a 180, essentially, from Jerome Powell. Not in a policy change, but in his verbal stance, you could see that he was a lot more optimistic and he spread a lot of peace instead of a lot of uncertainty. And what I mean by that is he came out and he said, hey guys, when we're looking at the kind of global landscape here, like we're actually a lot better off. People are talking about a recession and this and that. And he started giving data points to be like, hey, everyone calm down. It's not that bad. And so one of the first things he said was, let's look at inflation. Well, he said, hey, we're still on track, even considering everything, to hit our 2% inflation target by next year. We're on track. Things are going right. And he was not too concerned about it. He's like, things are good. The next thing he brought up was jobs. People were like, oh, we're going to go into a recession. And he said, look at the job numbers. You know, people kept bringing up to him that if you look at, you know, jobless claims and layoffs, he's like, new hires. He was like, new hires are slowing down. But he goes, well, the reason that new hires are slowing down is because we have such a steady job market environment. If you look at layoffs and jobless claims, those are really, really low. So companies don't need to go and do a bunch of new hires because people aren't getting laid off and people are secure with where they're at. So there's a nice balance there, a healthy balance with what we're seeing in the job market. We're not seeing anything too fearful. So he's like, well, that's good as well. He's like, we're still expecting to cut rates at least 2 times this year. If things get worse, he said that could be more and that could increase. But the rate cuts that people have been anticipating are still on the right track. And so as people started to hear this stuff, they started to become a lot more bullish. And then the last thing, the final one happened over the weekend, Sunday evening, Monday morning, and Trump came out and he was saying, hey, you know, maybe we'll make these upcoming reciprocal tariffs a little bit looser than we intended. Maybe instead of getting more aggressive here, maybe we will be a little bit looser with the stance that we take to approaching this. And then that got people even more and more excited. And so what we started to see investors do, and again, I'll explain how this relates to the crypto markets, but what we started to see investors do is start to come back in and enter back into the risk markets like crypto. And we started to see everything pump back up again because they're saying, hey, if jobs are fine in the US, if inflation's on the right path, if tariffs could be loosening up, if the Fed is speaking like they're in a more bullish, dovish light, then what, you know, why are we so fearful? Did we oversell the market? And the response from investors was, yeah, we oversold the market. Now with all of these things kind of considered in this new light, the markets deserve to be higher. And I think that's why we've started to see a shift back to the upside here, as crypto has been pretty closely correlated to the traditional equities markets, right? And so now as we're moving back up, people are starting to get excited. And Tivo, I'm going to pass it off to you because I know I'm monologuing and I'm ranting here. But I'm excited because I've said this and I stand by it, that as the FUD starts to dissipate, as a lot of this macroeconomic uncertainty starts to become a lot more clear, as it starts to go away, I think that we are in for a just ripping back to the upside for just about everything. Especially when it comes to a lot of these core cryptos that have been bogged down, I think that we are going to just see a lot of upside potential. And we got just a taste of that, right? We're not saying, we didn't get any guarantees. It was like, hey, tariffs might loosen up. The macroeconomic environment looks a little bit better. Like we're on a healthy place and the markets just started sailing back to the upside. And so I think as this really starts to go away, as we get confirmation of this data, I think that we have the potential to go and do that. Now, who's to say? Again, is it all over? Is the guaranteed bottom in? Can it not get worse? No, right? You know, that's why we're saying, hey, we're waiting for confirmation. But I think that when we do get that, we have the potential to go soaring. In fact, they just had an interview, Tivo, with the guy who originally brought Dave Weisberger, the guy who originally brought algorithmic trading to the stock market like 35 years ago. And he was saying the same thing. He's like, this is a short-term thing. It's a bit of an overreaction. As this goes away, he was saying, hey, I think Bitcoin can go $240,000, $250,000, maybe even $300,000. And he's saying, you know, I think that we do have a lot of room to the upside. And it wasn't just limited to crypto. He's saying, you know, all these risk assets can recover. And he kind of believes that, hey, we can see quite a bit of upside as well. And so again, never legal, financial, or tax advice, but I do think that there's a solid argument to be made here. Again, not saying that the bottom's in, but I think as this stuff starts to go away, it's hard to be bearish on, it's hard to be bearish on the markets if it does go away.
Yeah, for sure. The I nailed the call of the Bermuda Triangle of uncertainty. I'm pretty proud of that because I saw it. I definitely saw it coming down the pipe. It just seemed like a layup, and it stems from back what we said when that December Fed meeting, when basically we were all coiled up, kind of, you know, the Trump pump had plateaued a little bit up at the top, and it was more waiting for the Fed to not even cut or do anything, just to do nothing really, and then everybody was positioned to do with that Santa Claus rally, right? The 2 weeks into the end of the year. And we've brought it up several times this new year because me and you know, we're on the wrong side of that one. But nobody knew, nobody, like him talking the markets down like that, like saying like, oh, well, if we need to cut, or if we need to raise, we'll raise rates, was so unnecessary because and I think he's done a great job, you know, this last time of just going with the data. And he always said that, but the market freaked out when he said, yeah, if we need to raise, we'll raise. But it that fueled kind of, this is my opinion, but it fueled the fire around kind of not inflation data, inflation expectations. And so we didn't have this in the sheet, but you know, when we were talking about this, it came top of mind because I've mentioned this before. And so this is the University of Michigan, the UMich, inflation expectations by a party affiliation. And this is over the years, this is a reputable survey on, you know, a bunch of, you know, consumer sentiment surveys. And so this is the inflation data by party affiliation. So you see the blue line here is Democrats. And so this is a yearly or multi-year chart. So if you go to 24 here, you see just like inflation trending down, trending down, trending down, trending down. November 2024 right here is election day, its lowest point. And then, you know, Trump wins the election and now inflation rockets, inflation expectations rocket. And then again, this isn't a one-sided political thing. Same thing with Republicans, right? It's steadily coming down, steadily coming down, steadily coming down. Election day, inflation's gone, inflation no more. And so if you reverse it and take it to the means, right? Like these lines were trending in the right direction, basically. And what the data is showing is inflation is slowly trending down. So if you take away these ridiculous moves in both directions, that's, you know, this is where inflation's going. It's trending down. And so when Powell said that in December, it freaks everybody out. And then the news just takes hold of these surveys all the time. And that's where you get those headlines of, you know, the White House is planning to drive the economy off a cliff and, you know, tariffs will cause, you know, X amount of percent inflation. And it's all headlines. And again, not to say that it isn't true if things happen to shake out a certain way, but I think it's a lot of this type of media and narratives that we consume on both sides are strictly one side, whether you're pro or anti, you know, this political party or pro or anti this political party, that is now assuming, you know, your narrative. And when with inflation, you just have to look at the data. And the I guess the sad part about it is the data is backdated, right? So you're constantly getting PCE and those numbers that we mentioned on the show around inflation, but you're getting them kind of looking back. So you have to wait for that true data to come in, whereas these surveys come out and the media runs with them. And so I think we're in a good spot where, at least from the inflation side, you know, the data is backing up that inflation is still coming down, which is good. And then from the tariff side, you know, I think a pretty middle of the road opinion now that, you know, the administration has come out and said, you know, these are just negotiations, right? So, you know, are there going to be tariffs? Probably. Are they going to be as high as, you know, he said, you know, a couple weeks ago when the market tanked on the news? Probably not. So all this stuff is shaking out. I think the most interesting part, if you know, our favorite word, right, Brendan, zoom out and you take a deep breath. The market from the Dow to the NASDAQ to the S&P to NVIDIA to Bitcoin to Tesla, it all came down on basically this triangle of fear, inflation, jobs, and tariffs, which you could summarize it as, in a way, kind of politically driven. So it's been a politically driven downward trend this month. And then now what we're going to talk about the rest of the show, with, you know, new new BlackRock and World Liberty Financial doing stable coins, plus the legislation, plus the Bitcoin reserve. All of that is political positivity in the crypto space. So all markets across the world have come down because of political negative momentum. Meanwhile, Bitcoin and crypto has had positive political momentum that we haven't seen. So back to that chart where one thing's going down and one thing's going up, you got to meet in the middle. The divergence of price versus news is really interesting in a zoom out slash, you know, buy the dip opportunity. Again, like you said, never personal financial advice for anybody, but you know, if something gets taken down with everything else, it's a great time to go ahead and pick your winners. I feel like is the time where we are today. And again, you don't know. It's a headline-driven market, so more stuff can come out that's going to drive us lower for sure. Nobody can have a crystal ball and know that. But once this all gets settled out and we're in a good spot, I mean, Bitcoin and the crypto ecosystem politically in you know, we've never seen such a bullish setup for that. So, you know, all in all, bullish, right?
Guys, it's been a massive year in crypto with big price movements, headlines everywhere, and major institutions with even countries getting involved. That's why you're here listening to this podcast right now. And if you've been curious but feel like you've missed the boat, don't worry. There's still time, like we talk about on these episodes every week. With only 21 million Bitcoin ever to exist, it's designed to be scarce. And that scarcity can mean real staying power. And the team at CoinFlip Preferred believe stepping into crypto should be simple, secure, and on your terms. That's why they pair you with a dedicated crypto expert who guides you through every step from your very first transaction to more advanced solutions. Plus, CoinFlip is a registered money services business and does not custody funds, so you stay in control and protected. With nearly a decade of collective experience, CoinFlip Preferred's client managers know the space inside and out. If you are ready to explore the world of digital assets with confidence, visit coinflip.tech/crypto101 or use the promo code crypto101 for 50% off transaction fees. Valid one per customer until May 30th, 2025.
Yeah. And BlackRock has clearly picked sides here. I mean, if we look at what they're expecting and at what's happening over here, they're making pretty competent bets. I mean, let's look at this most recently. They're expanding their Biddle fund, which was launched about a year ago over on Ethereum. And they're saying, hey, we're going to expand this to Solana. And with this expansion, we're expecting it to grow to a $2 billion tokenized money market fund. So this is a huge play. And then on top of this, they said, hey, we have seen how successful the Bitcoin ETFs have been over in the United States. And now we're going to start moving these to Europe. So BlackRock is now launching their Bitcoin ETP in Europe following the US success. Now, for people who might not know all the data or might not be as familiar, the Bitcoin ETFs were some of, if not the most successful ETFs in history. When you look at how much came into them, how fast the AUM grew, the assets under management grew, how much volume they ran, it shattered records. One of the fastest growing, in fact, I think it actually does hold the record for the fastest growing ETF in history. It destroyed what the gold ETFs did in their entire existence in less than a year. And so, you know, these things just exploded onto the scene, and BlackRock's at the forefront of it. They're the largest Bitcoin ETF out there. So when we look at the spot Bitcoin ETFs by volume market share, BlackRock accounts for nearly 80% of all of the Bitcoin ETF volume. So they're looking at this saying, hey, this is one of the most successful ETFs in history. We account for 80% of the volume. Let's expand this thing. If we go and we look at the assets under management, the AUM here, they have almost or really over $1 billion in assets under management inside of their Bitcoin ETF, again, holding the bulk of the market share. And so they're looking at this saying, if we have the most successful ETF in history, we have the majority of market share, we do the vast majority of volume, why should we not expand this offering elsewhere? And that's why we're seeing it come over to Europe. And I think the real question is, where are they going to go next? Why would they stop at Europe? It doesn't make sense if they have this product that they have the majority market share ownership in, and it's super successful, you know, where is it going to go to next? Which countries, which continents? And I think that's kind of the big question to keep in people's mind here is where could they go and what could that do? And I think the answer here is, you know, really the sky's the limit. I think that we are going to see this pretty much get a global level of adoption. It's BlackRock. You know, they have trillions and trillions of dollars in assets under management, and they are the largest asset manager on planet Earth. So I really don't see any reason why they could stop or would stop, especially when they've seen this kind of dominance and success. So again, I think that this just positively correlates to what's happening here over on the Bitcoin chart, and they just continue to crush it. And the next thing that we've seen here is that, again, other players, other people are coming in and they're remaining in the crypto game. You know, most recently, Trump's World Liberty Financial is debuting their plan for their own stablecoin. It's going to be called USD1. And I find this interesting because when we look back at that crypto White House summit, and again, we've talked about this weeks ago, but when they had that crypto White House summit, the big talk was around Bitcoin first. And then I think people were expecting a lot of conversation around altcoins or different industries and verticals. And there really wasn't. The only other industry that was talked about was stablecoins. So again, there was a lot of talk about Bitcoin. And then it was, let's talk about stablecoins. And they were brought up several times. And then here we are just a couple of weeks later. And World Liberty Financial, who has been dabbling in the crypto space for a little while, is saying, hey, we're actually going to be planning our own stablecoin. So I think that goes pretty far to say, you know, what their thoughts on the crypto industry are. Again, they wouldn't be building this kind of stuff if they saw it going anywhere. They're making a long-term play here. They see the value in it. And that's why we're seeing this kind of continue to stay bullish. So I do like this. I don't think that this is going to be the next Tether, the next USDC. Personally, I'll probably just continue to use my USDC or my USDT. Nothing against the USD1 coin, but we have seen some stable coins in the past have some troubles. And I know that USDT and USDC are tried, tested, and true. And again, that's just what I'm used to using. You know, it's not, I have no reason to go and hold a smaller market cap stable coin if I don't need to. And again, yeah, I don't think that this is all of a sudden going to be the number one stable coin or anything like that. And that's the point that I'm trying to come across here is that when it comes to stable coins, they are, again, while they can be backed in different ways, like this one, for example, is backed in U.S. government treasuries or short-term U.S. government treasuries of 100%. You know, how they back the stable coins are always going to be a little bit different. But at the end of the day, these things are supposed to be pegged one-to-one to the U.S. dollar. And so long as they do that, they do the job. So again, I don't know what's going to make them so different that they can acquire massive amounts of market share. Maybe that's their goal. Maybe it's not. I'm just saying, hey, I don't think this is going to be something that comes onto the scene, surpasses Tether and USDC, and, you know, just kind of takes over everything. I don't think it's going to be any kind of extreme use case like that. But onwards and upwards, TiVo. The news keeps on flowing. And we have Custodia. You know, they are going to be, where is it? They're going to be launching their first U.S. bank issued stablecoin called Avite. And this is going to be on Ethereum. So Custodia is essentially saying, hey, we want to be, this is Custodia Bank and Vantage Bank. They want to issue the first U.S. bank issued stablecoin. Again, a huge step for adoption. Some people really disagree with this, and I think there's a valid argument there. But I think the cool thing here is that banks are now looking at blockchain tech, something that was kind of supposed to disrupt their sector a little bit, and they're saying, hey, we see the value in this. We see the usefulness in this. And again, stablecoins have been and will probably continue to be a huge part of the conversation. I expect this stablecoin talk and hype and adoption to continue to increase. And with banks doing this, they're probably saying, hey, we realize that we can do these cross-border transfers, cross-border payments. We can do all of this at a fraction of the cost in a fraction of the time, and we can utilize blockchain stuff for this, or blockchain technology for this. And, you know, maybe this makes some people out there, because there are blockchain projects who specialize in doing that. But I think what we're starting to see is that a lot of these projects are just saying, hey, we'll just do it on our own. We'll have our own Solana-based project or Ethereum L2-based project, and we'll just have our own. We'll create our own, and we'll just do it ourselves, because it's not like it's something that's hard or complicated. If you look at most modern-day blockchain technology, you can make these transfers instantaneously, like right, you know, in a second, with almost no gas fees, right? And that's just the reality, is that most modern blockchains can do that. And people are just saying, hey, they're so easy to create now. I mean, look at pump.fun. That's not anything special, but they're saying, hey, you can, with a few clicks, you can create something on Solana. You know, imagine what these banks can do with a little bit more money. And they're able to do all this stuff themselves and do all these different kinds of payments and all that. So I want to go back to the original point, which is, again, the banks see value. These institutions, they see value, and they're utilizing blockchain technology more and more. We've seen it with Franklin Templeton on Solana. We've seen it with BlackRock on both Ethereum and Solana. We're now seeing it with banks. We're seeing it with World Liberty Financial. And of course, there's been all sorts of reports published by a lot of these big players like JP Morgan, Citibank, Bank of America, obviously BlackRock, Fidelity, and a lot of these other players talking about the future of blockchain technology and their plans to integrate it, their interest points. And a lot of that is around tokenization and RWAs. So I don't see this stuff slowing down.
More of posing a question, because I'm definitely not an expert, but a lot of the talks around stablecoin coins coming out of the administration was, you know, helping, you know, keep the dollar, you know, dominant in the world for trade. And I think it makes sense on paper, but like, what, just throwing out an idea in the sense that everybody wants access to the U.S. dollar. I think a lot of people that live in America, myself included, you know, as much as we might complain about the banks and interest rates on your savings account, et cetera, it's like, well, at the end of the day, we do have one of the best financial systems in the world, if not the best, even though, you know, there are tons of issues with it that we want to make it better, faster, and more accessible to the average person. You know, somebody in different places around the world, you know, can get their money taken away just like that. So access to the U.S. dollar, with, especially with inflation, is something that is appetizing to the rest of the world. So just an idea with, you know, trying to build out stable coins for that reason, but also, you know, all these tariffs and trade wars. You know, we've talked about BRICS on the show, right? And them kind of creating their own way to do trading and whatnot is something that I'm wondering if this gets implemented over the next couple of years. Like, hey, there's certain tariffs on your country, but you know, you can settle your trade in this stable coin, this US based stable coin, and get a percentage off. Or maybe there's no tariffs if you do the trade in this type of stable coin. You know, I don't know, just thoughts as we continue the innovation. So if we're moving on, I guess the enough stable coin talk for today, but something to keep in the rearview mirror as we move forward is more Bitcoin news. So I think Brendan might be back with us here. He dropped off the stream, but I think we got him back. We're moving on to the GameStop news. Brendan, are you with us?
I'm with us.
All right, there we go. Dude, a day of technical difficulties, but that's okay. We move on. So replace the current share and go to here. So big news last night. We didn't have it originally in the sheet, but we woke up this morning and saw that GameStop has announced that it is going to start buying Bitcoin and add it to the Treasury Reserve asset. This is something that has been speculated now for months, really. And then there was the famous, X picture of Michael Saylor with the GameStop CEO, and they finally pulled the trigger and did it. So there weren't any specifics on how much. I know Michael Saylor posted a post this morning. It was a poll. It was how much Bitcoin does GameStop have to buy for the community to respect them? And it was like, you know, 50 million, they're just LARPing, up to, you know, billions and billions. You know, I forget the exact number, like the king of Bitcoin adoption type thing. So I'm sure that poll, actually, let's pull it up because it was pretty funny. Let's go right here. We can do live. Here it is. What's the minimum amount of Bitcoin that GME needs to buy to be respected? King move, 3 billion plus. They can be in the Tesla tier, the MSTR starter kit, or just LARPing. That made me laugh. But GME is on the tracks. And then another thing was Jim Cramer here. So Cramer did talk about this on, you know, his show, months ago or whatever. It was like, oh, GameStop should just buy, you know, Bitcoin, and it'll rally, you know, the meme stockers to pile in. And so he did it. And then here's the CEO of GameStop, Ryan Cohen, you know, saying no, because he's afraid that the Jim Cramer hex has been put on him. But another company diving in. I know we've seen a lot of, you know, there's a lot of companies now, whether it's, you know, the Rumble, the video company, doing small amounts. A lot of the miners are jumping in, doing, you know, different amounts and whatnot. So it seems to be catching on. I don't think anybody's done it. Obviously not as big as MicroStrategy. It'll be interesting to see kind of the first one that makes a big, big splash and buying a bunch. But what are your thoughts on GameStop?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've talked about how companies are going to look to add Bitcoin to their balance sheets. And I think that this is a trend that just continues from here. I don't see a world where we get a looser regulatory environment and then we see like less companies be interested in bringing this on. I think it's just going to continue to be more and more. So again, we saw Microsoft voting on this at the end of last year. I think we're going to see a lot of other companies start to look at this as a viable option. I'm not going to say it's going to be nearly this aggressive or this kind of MicroStrategy-like approach, but I do think that there is a world where we start to see companies accumulate, you know, 1, 2, maybe 5% of their balance sheet in something like Bitcoin, right? Of their available cash. And I think that that is a very, very reasonable thing to see, especially when you look at its past 10 years of performance. Now, I'm not saying that this is going to be the case for altcoins, right? I'm not saying that, hey, companies are just going to start buying up altcoins left and right. I think it's probably the case where we keep this exclusive to Bitcoin, but yeah, not shocked. And again, I think more companies are going to look at this as a very, very viable strategy moving forward. Granted, a lot of them are probably going to be in the LARP starter kit or whatever it was called.
Yeah, I agree. But hey, dip in the toe in the water before you can jump all in. So again, just more and more positive news flow. And continue with the positive news flow. Solana ETF officially filed Fidelity. So they have their 19B-4. We'll throw it up here. Officially filed. Again, just more bullish news, slowly moving forward. My biggest thing, it's Solana and Ethereum ETFs combined, is, and we've talked about it at our end of year show, was like, I think staking would be huge for the ETFs. Again, so not that, you know, the whole, I guess you get the whole amount. That would be the same as if you staked it on your own. Obviously, you know, the house has to take their cut, but if you give the staking into the ETFs, it obviously just becomes a traditional dividend for the ETF. And then I think that opens up a lot more opportunity for, you know, people that might take a look at it just because they see the dividend. And also, I wonder if, you know, there's a lot of dividend investors, like the Dividend Aristocrats ETF and stuff like that, that, you know, part of the makeup of what allows them to buy a stock is if it has a dividend or not above a certain percentage. So something to keep an eye on. Very exciting news flow and positive news in the crypto markets, which again has been contrast to the macroeconomic trend of just whether it's tariffs, inflation, or whatever. So, you know, hope you enjoyed the episode in the sense that we could give you some light in some seemingly the dark tunnel of macroeconomic news, but crypto's bright. And I think to end on a fun note, Brendan, I know last week, I think it was after we were done recording, I messaged you. I was like, hey, you know, I know you always have, you know, dates and stuff that you mark on your trading view for, you know, trends and historical patterns. And so I asked you to put a, to mark the Solana ad. So last year we talked about the Solana ad and we said, hey, maybe this is the type of, funny, memeable, bad news on the downside that might mark a local bottom. So walk us through what you're seeing.
Well, it very well could have. Again, no guarantees here, but sure enough, you said this, so I put this little notification on my chart over here, and ever since then, it has been going up and up and up, and Solana has been recovering. So I'm gonna leave this little note here. Talking about this Solana ad down here, I hope that this is the bottom. I think it could be so funny. It would be even better if we were the ones to call it and say this is the kind of thing that we see being just like one of those ironic market bottom moments. In the same way, when you see Coinbase as the number one app on the App Store, we're like, oh, the top's in. Well, this is kind of the inverse of that down here. So, I mean, so far, TiVo, this looks nice, right? I mean, again, we've talked about Solana. It's bottomed out over here so many times. In 2024, it found support down here in March, in April, in May, in June, in July, in August, in September. And so now we're coming back to this. And look, it's bouncing. It's seen support ever since the Solana ad. So I know that they launched it. There was backlash. Then they took it down. But maybe it was a net positive. Maybe it was a necessity in order for us to actually find a bottom. And we'll keep tabs on this. We'll make sure that we continue to watch this closely, but it is pretty funny.
Yeah, just, you know, just another thing to keep on the charts. And, you know, as we move forward, we're long-term investors. We have a long-term view, but that's what we do every week here to try to keep you up to date with the news. Whether it's the macro or the specific crypto stuff, you know, that's what we do every week. So we appreciate everybody who comes every week. Again, I always say it, especially since the recent price action, we've got a ton of new listeners, which we greatly appreciate. So keep on coming back for more. And, you know, we're always checking out the comments. So if you have questions or ideas for segments, throw them in there. But I've been seeing a lot of positive interactions, both on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple. So thank you guys.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. We appreciate everyone coming in here. We love doing these episodes, even when we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. So thank you, everyone, for staying in there with us as we work through them. Again, plenty to talk about, especially as we bring quarter one to an end. And when we do this next week, it's going to be the first episode of Q2 2025. And we're sure that there's going to be just as much information to break down and talk about. So thank you all for tuning in. Of course, if you like the episode, make sure you hit that like button, you hit that subscribe button, you check out some of our other resources as well. We have all sorts of great content that is going up on our YouTube. If you're watching from another platform on YouTube, we do all sorts of podcasts, more market updates just like this one. And then, of course, a lot of tutorials. We understand that a lot of people want to learn, so we walk you through some of the best crypto platforms and projects and exchanges out there. And again, just a great place to learn a little bit more about the space. So thank you all for watching, and we'll see all of you at the same time, same place next week.